I'm saying, yes.
English public school is a private school. No, yeah, I don't think there's a going back on that. And
I'm not talking about going back. I'm saying that how do we as humans, and trying to be Christian perhaps, struggling with it, what is our, you know, if we flip the point over, are we just as outraged that we couldn't require everybody to sit through Islamic prayers every morning in their classroom? Would that be our reaction?
I understand.
I don't think so.
Question, though.
No. The interesting thing, to clarify just a little bit, and I wish I could remember the name of the case, was somebody versus Vitali or Vitalis or something like that was the case. The interesting thing about it was the prayer had been drafted by the state government in a generic version that was felt would be inoffensive to anyone who believed in God. So it didn't mention Jesus, for instance. It did, however, say Almighty God, and I guess that was a problem. But the other thing that was interesting about it was subsequent court cases have ruled against a moment of silence, which is kind of surprising.
Because you're using taxpayer dollars to fund the public school system.
And they're not learning enough the way it is, and so a moment of silence. Anyway, it's all right. I mentioned it not because I want to reinstitute prayer in school. You know, that law came down while I was in school. It didn't make any difference to me.
I remember saying the Lord's Prayer in school.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Pledge of Allegiance, and other things.
As long as there's tests.
But anyway.
As long as there's tests, there's going to be prayer.
That's what I mean. Anytime there's a test, there's a prayer, right? That's what you're saying. Okay. All right. So
if I recall correctly, that the moment of silence, some of the court language was that they were afraid that a child may ponder or think or reflect.
And that's right. We have to practice distraction.
My school system clearly didn't want us reflecting or pondering at all. I'm sure about that.
Right. Okay, you're about to get me started on school anecdotes. Okay, I better not. All right. I know there's a lot more that could be said and probably should be said, and if I were younger and more collected, I would probably say it, but it is timekeeper.
Still, it's quarter.
It's still the same there as there, but what?
Quarter to three, we're going to go
to three. So let's, let me open it up a bit and, you know, hopefully within the frame of reference that I initially requested that we not go rabidly after personalities or get into arguments over particular policies. Maybe we could have some conversation about some of the things that are on people's minds and that you're thinking about or struggling about or in relation to life in these United States.
Yeah. You had something in your notes about service and action that
I didn't know. Yeah. Well, simply.
Can you repeat the question, please?
She said.
I typed his note.
You typed a couple of pages, and one of those pages that she typed, there were some remarks about. Well, I'll put it this way. I'll back up and probably many of you know about the fellow by the name of William Wilberforce, a British. An Englishman from a couple hundred years ago who spent his political career striving to bring the British Empire to outlaw slavery, which at the time was before the American Civil War, and at the time there was not so much of a problem with slavery in the British Isles anymore, but there was a very large economic interest in the transportation of and sale of slaves in other parts of the world. And so he went up against huge, powerful forces. And I think it was like 20 years before he was successful. But think about it. That's a big success. And probably you've seen the film...
Amazing Grace.
Thank you very much. About his life. It's a very well done film. One of the things that comes... or that they portray well in the film, although it's not quite historically accurate, is a conversation that he has with his friend William Pitt, who became Prime Minister.
Pittsburgh.
And, no, anyway, not that Pitt. But William himself, as a young man, was trying to decide, should he go into the ministry or should he go into politics? And he felt very strongly called to a life of contemplation and of, you know, studying the scriptures and writing and that sort of thing. But he also had an interest in politics and in the government, which, of course, every young Englishman of that, you know, is their... That's what they're born to, right? So William Pitt, his friend, says to him, it's actually in a letter, they make it a conversation face-to-face in the movie, but he says to him, does not the principles of Christianity call us to action as well as contemplation? Mm-hmm. And so the idea that it's great, you love God, you love studying the Bible, you know, but society needs Christians to become involved in the political process and to bring with them their Christian convictions. And I don't know if that was the tipping point or what, but Wilberforce did then stand for Parliament, was elected, and had a career in Parliament. And it was... I don't know about the very first year, but for 20 years in a row, he introduced a bill to Parliament for the abolishment of slavery. And he was vilified. He was, you know, he was actually driven into drug addiction and all sorts of problems, you know, because of probably what today we would call...
harassment.
Well, harassment, yes. But that's not what I meant. I was thinking of...
bullying?
No, what do you call it whenever your colon, spastic colon, or irritable bowel syndrome or something, you know, he was trying to medicate, and colitis. What was available at the time were various opiates.
They call it colitis? Or
colitis, yeah,
Crohn's disease.
But eventually, they were able to win over a majority in Parliament, and they outlawed slavery from the British Empire, which was a great victory. So, the point is, as one man put it, it's great to be a good Samaritan who picks up guys who've been beaten up and left for dead along the side of the road. But if that happens often enough, shouldn't we do something about policing the road? In other words.
Right.
It's like, so the distinction between social service, which is where we do things to help others, that's good, you know. But if there's something that we can do that removes the causes of why they need help, that's what we call social action. So social service and social action, Christians are actually called to both. And I think that what I'm saying is, like, I used Wilberforce as an example of someone who chose not merely to, you know, like, buy the occasional slave that came across his path so he could set him free, or to go and sort of put salve on the wounds where the chains rubbed, but actually strove through action in the political arena to change the government and the society's view of slavery because of his Christian conviction, which is in our Declaration of Independence, right? All men are created equal. And yes, for how long almost was it? Well, Abraham Lincoln said, fourscore, yeah. For that long, you see, there was that incongruity, even among such enlightened individuals as Thomas Jefferson, you know, who we understand to be the principal author of that document, continued to own slaves himself until he died, having children with his slave women.